Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for more traditional exercise such as weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447. Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet online and on KBIA. I'm Ryan Famuliner. Columbia City Clerk has until May 8th to decide whether the petition known as Repeal 6214 has enough signatures and is valid, and whether the city can continue with its plans approved last month with the developer, the Opus Group. If you've been following this story, you know that this is about another student housing complex planned for downtown Columbia, a 256-bed apartment complex on Locust Street at 7th and 8th Streets. Those in favor of the plan, including the mayor, say increasing the housing opportunities and investment downtown is a good thing and say the project proposal was completely within current zoning rules. Opponents of the plan say the deal doesn't do enough to address infrastructure needs or the livability of Columbia's downtown communities, and they've gathered more than 3,000 signatures from Columbia citizens who agree with them. They also have issues with the way the proposal moved through the council approval process, saying it didn't allow proper time for analysis. So what happens now? To help us sort this through all this today, I'm joined in studio by Ward 6 City Council member Barbara Hoppe. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
And Tracy Griever-Rice, a former council candidate and community advocate who helped gather signatures on Repeal 6214. Tracy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'd also love to hear from you and our audience today. What's your view? Are you for or against the Opus Group development, and why? Let us know by giving us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. So first, maybe just as some background, since we're going to talk a lot about this issue, could you explain, maybe Barbara, a little bit about the Opus Group proposal and I guess how it went through council?
Opus is a six-story student complex with no retail on the bottom. And it went before council with two other projects, collegiate housing properties, which was the group that originally wanted to build where the Niedermeyer is, and then ACC, which is a much bigger development of maybe 700 units that is interested in developing by Providence Road in that area. And so council was informed that there were some time deadlines for all of those developments, and so they needed a special timeline to have those considered. And we've done that before. I felt like as long as it followed process, we could do it, consider it. But I was very hesitant and skeptical about some of the projects and whether I would actually approve it. But I felt like they deserved their day in council, let's put it that
and
it, way.
And in the end, the Collegiate Housing Partners project and Opus Group was approved. The other one was not, I think.
Right. And I only voted for Collegiate Housing because they had gone through the entire process pretty much. But I drew the line at not approving Opus or ACC because of a variety of things, not complying with our planning documents and concerns about infrastructure and who pays for it.
Okay. And so, Tracy, Repeal 6214, what is that? And I guess how did it come about kind of in the wake of this?
Sure. Repeal 6214 is a petition to repeal an ordinance passed by council. It's petitioning is set out in the charter as a right of citizens, of registered voters, in response to a council action. The number of signatures is based on the percentage, based on a percentage of folks who voted in the last mayoral election. So our goal was 3,209 signatures is what we required in order to have a good petition. We started the petition drive in response to the council's and city manager's decision to move those three projects through on a special meeting basis. I know that the special meeting rule has been used before, but it's used rarely. The last time it was used, I believe, was last summer over something to do with the airport, which was, you know, negotiating airlines as a public good as opposed to a private development. The actual wording of the special meetings rules is one that was apparently written mid-century. It sounds sort of funny and quaint to the modern ear, but it has a very specific set of rules about how to do it. Those weren't followed, and the city manager publicly said that he didn't follow those rules. And by choosing a special meetings time of noontime during weekdays, workdays, means that, you know, a very, very many people in Columbia, unless they've had weeks' notice to schedule vacation, take hours off, get a babysitter, get a substitute teacher for their classroom, et cetera, would have no way to participate in those. So we felt very strongly that the public was not appropriately informed, and that the role of the council in considering whether or not any ordinance that moves through is appropriate is supposed to be partly based on response from the community. So if you take out the response process, you can't be authentically doing that work. Mm-hmm. So that was the issue, mm-hmm. And what initiated it. It's been quite successful. We submitted over 3,600 signatures. We're not quite sure what's going to happen, but we had people come out of the woodwork wanting to participate in terms of both collecting signatures. We had more than 60 people working on it, as well as getting the signatures. And the petition process is apparently one that's been on the books for a long time but never used, so we're all trying to figure out what is arguably allowed and not allowed and see what's going to happen.
Well, and that is one question, is that there's
just address, you know, there's a difference of opinion in terms of the way the special meeting was called. There were actually two public hearings, one at the regular council time, and then another one just to give extra time for public response. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty clear from our city attorneys that the process we used is appropriate. It should be used sparingly. I agree. And so I just wanted to clarify mm-hmm. that.
Well, and because I guess even though there are many opinions that people in this behind the petition have about development in general, really mm-hmm. the challenge is about the legality of
Right. It's about the process, and it's about the spirit of the law as well as the letter of the law. And actually, the two public hearings were held less than 48 hours apart, one on Monday evening and the next one on Wednesday at noon, as an add-on to a city council retreat. That had its own agenda and set of issues and is open to the public like all meetings except personnel ones, but not widely attended by the public as a typical hearing process. So, you know, there's the spirit and the letter of the law.
I think I and other council members felt like OPIS and ACC had been in the public light, both in council discussions, in the newspapers, and we felt like we were certainly communicating with residents and that they would weigh in on it. And I certainly had my strong concerns and had been talking with the public. So at least for this one, I felt like if there was really a drop-dead deadline, I wanted to be fair both to the public and to the applicant. Obviously, there wasn't a drop-dead deadline, right, as we found, and that's another issue.
And that's another issue why we feel like we, you know, need to continue to move forward with whatever we need to do to have good transparency with the way local governance works, and to have, you know, a fair and just process so that everyone can expect to experience the same thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, we were told that this had to be done by April 1st, and yet no one could produce any documentable evidence of what the deadlines were. And, you know, it's now April 28th, right, today is? And as far as of Friday, OPIS hadn't closed on any of the properties that they're trying to buy to do this development. So And now that suddenly they have until the end of May to get that done.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've adjusted their drop dead deadlines, obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
There was a second council meeting. They could have gone on the regular schedule, and they would have. The second council meeting would have been on the last day of March, so they would have made their April deadline regardless. They never had to do that in the first place.
So, one question about this petition in general: will it have to hold up to that legal snuff of challenging the process, or if it's just deemed valid, is it still something the council will have to consider? Do you know what I mean? Is the legal standing important for this petition and the process moving forward?
Is the legal standing for the
whether or not the process did not follow code? Do you know what I mean? Since it hasn't
the petition will. If it's valid, mm-hmm.
it which
will
is just
move
about how many signatures
forward,
it has
whether
in the
or
process.
Not yeah. the special hearing was called and done legally,
is a separate issue.
So really, even if it does get to that standard by the city clerk, it is deemed valid. Then, regardless, this is going to be something the council may have to consider. And so, I guess the other question about that, though, is like you were saying, Tracy, that we learned a little bit about the process. There's some talk about whether the ordinance wasn't attached to the repeal petition when it was gathered, that kind of thing.
Right.
Do we know if that matters? That sounds like that may be another gray area.
That's a gray area legal issue. The language doesn't say it must be attached to the petition at the time of signing. So if it's attached when submitted, and I assume it was, then that may be make it valid. And then the Opus Development is arguing that it's not valid. And I've been an advocate in the council and with staff to say if there's a legal question about it, staff in the city should not make that determination. That's up for a court. We should not stop the petition if it's clearly invalid. That's one thing, but if there's a question, then it should move forward and let someone else challenge it.
Mm-hmm. I want to take a quick moment to remind our audience that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today on the show we're talking about the latest debate over downtown development. The Opus Group plans to build a 256-bed apartment complex at Locust Street at 7th and 8th downtown. But a petition is trying to overturn council approval for the project. Joining us in studio today to talk about the issue are Ward 6 City Council Member Barbara Hoppe and Tracy Griever-Rice, a former council candidate and community advocate who helped gather signatures on Repeal 6214. And for you in our audience, do you think the petition should be invalidated? We'd like to hear what you think. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at @IntersectKBIA. And that is what the mayor asked for publicly, that it just be invalidated. There's a risk of
right.
litigation.
And that way, I just want to make it clear that is not something council agreed upon or approved. That is a request by the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had no vote on that either before council or during council or a sense of consensus mm-hmm. before council on that. So if it's invalid legally, that's one thing, but for staff to determine it's invalid, the majority of council, it was my sense, was not in favor of invalidating it.
Yeah, the mayor's been quoted calling petition campaigners dangerous, reckless, and irresponsible. He's made publicly concerned about litigation, and the Opus Group has said, you know, they even gave a deadline last week that if the city didn't, you know, invalidate this by last week or deem it valid, then they may open themselves up to litigation.
Right. Well, the city has 30 days after a petition is filed to validate the signatures and the quality of the petition, and those 30 days aren't up yet. And so we're looking forward to May 8th
and hopefully
what's going to happen.
They'll know before that, I would hope.
Yep.
Yeah.
We feel pretty confident that the signatures of the valid will make those, and if we are a little bit shy, we'll have 14 days to collect those, and that won't be any problem. And the arguable part of the way the charter is written in terms of how to petition is an interesting one, and we'll just kind of see how that plays out. I'm glad to hear Barb say that at least some on council think that's going to be a council decision to sort of sort through whether or not what they want to do with that. But one interesting thing
unless it's clearly invalid, it's valid.
Right.
As far as counsel is
yes.
concerned.
Okay.
Unless someone challenges it, else
right.
challenges
right.
it in
court. Well,
court.
To yeah. attach the entire ordinance, all 30 pages, plus a signature page to each signature page would run on average $3 to $5 signature page, which would, and I think we turned in 437 signature pages.
And
so we have
and
to meet the criteria right. of it being affordable
and
to petition.
And just step back just
mm-hmm.
a little bit.
Sure.
I think the speed at which people signed and the number showed that they were concerned for a variety of reasons.
Right.
I know
mm-hmm.
many people who signed the petition and it was for a variety of reasons.
Yeah. What do you, Tracy, yeah. what do you think has mobilized so many people around this?
I think that there are three or four concerns that that at some intuitive level, almost all Colombians feel right now in terms of what's going on with downtown development. Maybe this is a good segue into talking about downtown development more mm-hmm. generally. I mean, one is city administration itself has told us over and over again that we have a crisis in both infrastructure availability and funding that, you know, until just days before these three projects were on the shortened time frame agenda, that there was need for even a moratorium on additional development.
And,
so,
and I called for that for other reasons
right,
before
right.
I knew about the infrastructure.
So we're worried about infrastructure, and we know we need to be worried about infrastructure. We're also concerned about the C2 zoning code and the fact that we've simply evolved to being an interesting market to people who want to do things in downtown Columbia, unimagined by many, many of us, out of scale, disproportionate, and probably for an audience that they're maxing out already.
It's right now pretty much anything goes
right.
to the highest bidder.
Mm-hmm. We need to not be the wild, wild west of college town development. You know, we need some rules to come up with something we can all live with for a long time.
Right, right. I need to take a moment to remind our audience, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today we're talking about the latest debate over downtown development. The Opus Group plans to build a 256-bed apartment complex at Locust Street and 7th and 8th downtown, but a petition's trying to overturn council approval for the project. Joining us in studio today to talk about the issue are Ward 6 City Councilmember Barbara Hoppe and Tracy Grieber-Rice, a former council candidate and community advocate who helped gather signatures on Repeal 6214. We'd also love to hear from you in our audience today. What do you think about the pace of downtown development, specifically housing targeted at students? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. We'd like to remind you can watch Intersection as streaming video online during our live conversations every Monday afternoon at 2 at kbia.org. You can watch that video and join our online chat by going to kbia.org and scrolling down to the link for Intersection. Again, that's Mondays at 2 online at kbia.org. So one thing I wanted to bring up very quickly, we talked about this very briefly before the show. It was the first I'd heard about it. Now I'm seeing that the Columbia Daily Tribune's reporting just in the last 20 minutes or so about an agreement between the city and the Opus Group, possible agreement that may have been brokered by Jenny Chadwick, actually the newest council member, where Opus might agree to a new development agreement. We were talking about it just briefly before the show. What do we know about that possibility right now?
I don't know too much, but a little bit that Jenny is introducing an agreement that will be in the next council meeting, going through regular timing,
mm-hmm.
No special meeting on that, that will entail some revision on the Opus development. Two things that I was particularly concerned about was that the Avenue of the Columns Planning Committee called for retail or office on the first floor, and Opus did not contain that. I understand they will be putting sort of activity on the first floor. And then I was also concerned about who the infrastructure needed and who pays for it and how much, and that every development pay their fair share of new infrastructure. So apparently that is going to be addressed differently in some way and add more. But whether it's sufficient or I have yet to see the numbers and be mm-hmm. able to see
yeah.
that.
And I know, Tracy, you may not be able to give me your full opinion because you don't have all the facts about it yet either. But I'm reading this while I try to host a show. I'm reading this article, and it's,
yeah, nice.
And,
read it.
And,
yeah.
And Jenny is saying that, you know, one of the intentions of this is reintroducing the project and allowing it to go through the due process. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. What are your initial thoughts about this idea, I guess?
Well, it sounds to me like our concerns about due process have been heard, and that it's going to be the ordinance will be heard and considered on the reasonable time schedule. So that in and of itself is a win. We made some impact on terms of getting the city to pay attention to those issues.
Okay. What about, you mentioned four issues that you think people may have taken. I think we only got to about two of them before I interrupted you. What are the other ones you think that have invigorated people about this issue and you think that may come up in this due process?
Sure. I think the other two are, one, just an overbuild or fueling of a boom-bust cycle in the student housing market, which is not consistent with what the population is doing and is going to do for the next 20 years. So, you know, we'll all be left with trying to figure out what to do with these very specifically
and
built buildings.
And the 25-story student complex is not a dead issue.
Yeah, that's but then I think the other thing is, you know, is what Barb mentioned sort of about the avenue of the columns plan. The city of Columbia in the last 10 to 15 years has gone through multiple different planning processes around either touching on, adjacent to, or specifically about what happens in downtown Columbia. And, you know, adding public space to the first floor is interesting and a step, but that's a far cry from what either Sasaki or the Avenue of the Columns plan or several others, the Vision Commission. H3 Charette had in mind for 8th Street, which is supposed to tie together the university and the city and county public public institutions.
Right. And if I could just back up, I've been on the council since 2006 and pushed before I was on the council for a community planning process, which was our visioning process that took off in 2006 and was very robustly attended by all segments of the community. And so we had our vision plan, and then it had implementation steps. 2010, we had 2 years later a focus on downtown and the downtown area with the H3 Charette plan. And then Sasaki was before that, and around that same time, a East Area plan. And so that was like the first step to then the changes. And so I've been trying to not only do the visioning and the planning, but the changes. And the changes have been very slow in coming. And I'm a little disappointed that staff hasn't been more vigorous in saying, okay, carrying forward the implementation recommendations. So sometimes it's you feel like you're pushing in not only one elephant, but several elephants uphill to get things done. So we're at this point where we really need, I think, some planning. That's why I proposed the interim C2 zoning as our zoning consultants are planning and recommending for downtown. Because I'd like to do something that sort of keeps the general status quo until we can put in place the ideas of the community.
Yeah, well, and it's kind of hard, right? I mean, because ultimately these are ideas we think would like to happen, but the market kind of drives a lot of things that actually develop downtown.
Yes,
right?
And no, and so, yeah. Right. When you have no regulations, the market drives it in a wild and many times negative way. And so the best communities have some planning. If we're a good community for investing this year, we'll be a good community in downtown for investing next year. And a lot can happen that can really be negative for our downtown in just the next year if we don't put something in place, because those structures will be here for 50 or 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need something that will serve the downtown well for that period of time.
Wanted to quickly bring in a call. We'll go to break here in just a moment, but we have a call from LR in Columbia. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for calling today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, sure. So what did you want to add to today's conversation?
Well, I'm very concerned about the infrastructure question. I live off of Old Highway 63, and in fact, Barbara Hoppe should be very familiar with this because I'm in her neighborhood. And since there was all of those apartment complexes that suddenly sprang up on the south end of Old Highway 63, suddenly there are huge traffic jams on Old Highway 63 that never used to be there. And there's no bus that goes down that road. And so we've already created a situation kind of sort of on the outskirts of downtown where people have no choice but to sit in traffic that never used to be there.
There's a couple of things. Right now, the traffic on Old 63 is extremely bad because of the work, the construction work they're doing on Highway 63. So that will be changed once the construction is done. I implemented an improved bus service to the Old 63 student housing complexes. To help alleviate some of that traffic. So the city is working very diligently on expanding bus transit, and Como Connect will be coming out in August. So I don't know if you're speaking to, should we have all our student housing downtown and lose downtown for everyone?
No,
I certainly don't think we should. Yeah.
No, I'm much more concerned about the infrastructure and our commitment to fossil fuels, because I'm not seeing, you know, that the expansion of public transportation that it seems to me we have to have along with development.
Right. Yeah. Well, thanks. I agree 100%. Yeah, that transit is really important in getting around for students and for the community.
Right. Yeah, thanks for calling, LR. I'm going to have to let you go because we're going to have to go take a short break. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the latest debate over downtown development, the petition to overturn a plan to build a 256-bed apartment complex at Locust Street and 7th and 8th downtown. Joining us in studio today to talk about the issue are Ward 6 City Council Member Barbara Hoppe and Tracy Grieber-Rice, a former council candidate and community advocate who helped gather signatures on Repeal 6214. I'm Ryan Femuelner. We'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Femuelner, and today we're talking about the latest debate over downtown development. The Opus Group plans to build a 256-bed apartment complex at Locust Street at 7th and 8th downtown, but a petition is trying to overturn council approval for that project.
Joining us in studio today to talk about the issue are Ward 6 City Councilmember Barbara Hoppe and Tracy Griver Rice, a former council candidate and community advocate who helped gather signatures on Repeal 6214. And for you and our audience, do you think overturning the agreement with the Opus Group might be too risky, as it might open up the city to a lawsuit? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You can also tweet us at intersectkbia or join our online chat. We talked about that a little bit at the beginning of the show, but is that a real risk here? I mean, I guess now we talked a little about the Jenny Chadwick idea. I don't know if I should call it that. But
We have to take it with a grain of salt. Anyone can say that they're going to sue the city for a variety of reasons. So there's a lot of different elements and components to whether Opus would really have any claims and damages. And I think the big thing, which I told Opus after the vote, is if we have a petition process that the public can follow, that nothing is finalized until the time deadlines for that petition process have expired. So they're on notice when they do business with the city that if the city council approves an agreement, there still is this process that could be filed in a certain period of time that would challenge that. And so that all plays into whether there's damages or not, or what's on the books that they should expect. It doesn't happen that often, but it can.
Sure. Another thing to pick up on that we were talking about before we went to the break was the fact that this Opus Group proposal is on that avenue of the columns, right? Does that make this a bigger issue than some of these other proposals we see around town? I mean, does it make this particularly contentious since we have, again, so much, you know, all these consultant reports and visioning workshops and all the stuff we've done over the last few decades even? Does that make this more contentious, really?
Well, I think it's certainly a factor whether it conforms to our planning process. The bigger picture, and it's not just the avenue of the columns, but all downtown, period, we don't have historic preservation ordinances that really have teeth in it. Anyone could come along and, with enough money, remove a whole block of Broadway and put up just a parking structure, if that's what they wanted to do with our present zoning. So I wouldn't limit it just to this street and Opus. And that's why I, in particular, would like to see some basic interim C2 zoning until our consultants come back with the full rezoning ordinance revisions.
Now, Tracy, do you agree with that? I mean, is the place not as important here? I mean, and by the way, for the audience, she's back from allergies.
Excuse me. yeah, I think that it. I agree with Barb that it's not so much the avenue of the columns plan, though 8th Street is well set up to be an important commercial thoroughfare between public institutions, so it's a shame to lose the opportunity to do that. But just generally, we've spent, goodness gracious, like 25 years having a conversation about the value of mixed use and mixed income and housing and, you know, some mixing markets to have a really thriving downtown. And it's a shame to have done all of that work, got the locals on board, and then have these very large scale projects come in that are inconsistent with what we know makes for a good, safe, vibrant downtown.
And these are buildings that will be there for 50 or perhaps 100 years, depending on the quality of the building. And that's a long time. We don't, if you take up all your downtown with student housing and it's not a good balance or mix, and the retail component isn't in there, plus you're not, you don't have the means to pay for the infrastructure and pay for the existing maintenance of other neighborhoods, you have some significant problems.
Right. You mentioned it
briefly there, but I wonder, could we go into a little bit more about the C2 zoning? We talked about the Wild Wild West earlier in the show. We could do a whole show just on C2 zoning.
Right.
But just maybe briefly talk a little bit about that issue and where we are in that process and what that does to downtown development and what developers are able to do.
I and the council requested that we look at some interim basic C2 zoning changes until our consultants come back in maybe a year with the whole city revision of our zoning ordinances, which are very antiquated. So that was sent to planning and zoning. There were some basic recommendations. There was input from groups. I think that was heard last week in planning and zoning. They tabled it. I have concerns about planning and zoning either understanding or motivations in tabling it from things I've heard. I wasn't at the meeting, but I think it's very important that those basics or some basics move forward. The Downtown Leadership Council is in favor of it. The zoning consultants are in favor of some basic revisions.
What are the current state of C2, though? What does that allow developers to do? You know, what
there's
is,
no
how is that?
Height, there's no height restriction. So, you know, the 25-story student complex that we've periodically heard about could come forward and be done. And they have the zoning as right. There's no requirements for parking. And some people do and don't want that. And to a certain extent, but it does have consequences for people who want to shop downtown to adjacent neighborhoods. People talk about unintended consequences of interim zoning, but there's intended consequences and unintended consequences of doing nothing. So that's the parking, the height, and what was retail.
Because the C stands for commercial, right?
Right, commercial,
even
right.
Though it's mostly residential.
So it's the highest, well, not the highest, but the second highest type of dense development and type of development you can do. And originally, we just had residential on like the second floors and really didn't contemplate its use at all, even the second floors. Then we allowed it. There's significant problems there. The C2 amendment looks at least requiring retail on Broadway from Hitt to Providence. Originally, they were thinking Hitt to 8th Street, but I think that's not enough. And retail on 9th Street, but we're a growing community, and retail's going to grow, and you want active streets with student housing with no retail on the bottom. You pretty much have dead zones in the summer if the students are gone. And those are all important factors in a very vibrant downtown, which we've been working to get for 10 years, and we don't want to lose that.
Again, this conversation probably had been going on before that, but really came to the front during the Niedermeyer building situation last year. And
right.
I wonder your thoughts too, Tracy, on this issue. I mean, we've got, like you said, Barbara, we've got maybe a year or so before we hear back from these consultants. But, you know, what Tracy, do you have any ideas about what should be done about C2 as we wait?
I'm fully in favor of the interim C2 zoning changes that Barb has proposed. I think having a requirement for Broadway is important. I would like to see it across the C2 district personally. We know a lot of things from the existing planning literature, like big blocks, literally blocks sometimes, street blocks of single use that is only used during certain times of the day becomes a more dangerous area at other times of day. So there's a public safety issue mm-hmm. to the quality and mix of what we do in terms of downtown redevelopment. And, you know, part of why downtown Columbia is so fabulous that people want to come here from all over and build in it is because of the scale of at least the Broadway 9th Street corridors. I mean, it's a very, very human scale, and we need to put some density around it, including some height. But, you know, 10 stories is one thing. 30 stories is something entirely different. right, and make so use of our historical and cultural resources.
So is it possible for us to, as you mentioned earlier, Barbara, you know, restrict the Avenue of the Columns is off limits? These areas that we think we've identified in these consultants' reports and visioning. I mean, would developers play ball in that parameter? Would they say, okay, we can build a few blocks away? What are the factors there that are making this play out the way it does?
Well, the C2 interim would not put a halt to development. It would just have some basic parameters to it versus a total another alternative we could do is just have a total moratorium on development in downtown or the key area.
Could that happen? Is that realistic?
Until the zoning, yeah, I think so.
And the infrastructure.
Yeah, so this is a much, I mean, I proposed a moratorium when we had the crisis with the Niedermeyer because something had to be done. We were saving a baby, as far as I'm concerned. So this, the C2 interim, was seen as a more moderate step in the right direction and less drastic than a moratorium.
Mm-hmm. But you've still got developers putting in these large complexes in the interim period, in this 1 year period.
Right.
When we hear back from
right.
the consultants.
Yeah. I was going to say the C2 interim also contemplates a height limit with going to council and PNZ if you want to do beyond that with some incentive. So there's some control. It's just not a free for all.
Mm-hmm. Tracy, you said it almost surprised me a little bit that height might be okay in some areas. Do we have any examples of that right now? Where I guess we haven't had that much height, but where there's been successful development, things that you think make sense as opposed to something like the Opus that we're talking a lot about today.
Well, it's not the particularly tall, but I think the apartment buildings right across the street here on South 9th Street are incredibly well done. You know, they meet the scale, they meet the aesthetic, they've got the right mix
Those are, I guess, professional or so. What we want is a mix, and
right.
that is part of the mix we don't have right now. We don't want all student housing downtown.
Right, and again, some of these proposals have that, some don't. I mean, the Opus one, from what I understand, doesn't have at the moment has no plan for retail space.
Right.
Where go ahead.
I think their new revised plan is that they would put activities
that are amenities of the development.
Right.
Like their gym would be on the first floor or their clubhouse.
And how that would be adaptable in the future to retail or office. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the plan.
Right, since that's still early. You mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show, we talked about the Collegiate Housing Partners project and how that you voted for that, even though you voted against the Opus. But what's the difference between that project and the one we're talking about
now? Rezoning process. We saw the plans. They moved from a very negative location for the community in terms of removing our most historic property, looking for another location, went through the zoning process. They went through all the processes, and they, I think, had the permit and a will serve letter from the city that said everything was a go. So I felt like they had gone through the process, and it would be unfair to them to stop them.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything similar to that in this new process? Again, we only have limited information, but in this new process with Opus that either of you might think would make this more agreeable?
Again, I'd have to look at the retail on the bottom and then the extent to whether they're paying their share of new infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand they're paying $450,000 above and beyond what they would have paid. But I haven't seen the details on that, so I don't know how that actually pans out. That's what I've been told. It's a more modest structure with more of a diversity of beds that could be converted in the future to a different type of use, which is better than other developments. It's not 25 stories, which is positive. I'm for increasing in height, but I think a gradual metamorphosis over time is probably the more logical and better way to go. We've worked since the 80s to gradually improve downtown, and it's been really good. And so we have to make sure that we don't destroy the work.
I need to take a moment to remind our audience, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today we're talking about the latest debate over downtown development. The Opus Group plans to build a 256-bed apartment complex at Locust Street at 7th and 8th downtown, but a petition is trying to overturn council approval for the project, and now there's also another proposal that may create a new agreement. Joining us in studio today to talk about the issue are Ward 6 City Councilmember Barbara Hoppe and Tracy Grieber-Rice, a former council candidate and community advocate who helped gather signatures on Repeal 6214. And for you in our audience, what do you think needs to change about downtown development in Columbia? Let us know by giving us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You can also tweet us at intersectkbia. We have a comment from Gene in our chat room saying, I joined the repeal effort because the city has failed repeatedly to tell us the truth about the condition of our sewer system. How do we hold them accountable for their neglect?
Well, I know that the city council, members of the city council, are looking into how we've paid for sewer infrastructure in the past, what percentage is for new sewer, what percentage is for sewer maintenance. The city has not kept track of things like that before. They just sort of lumped them together. So we've asked them to try to separate it for the last 10 years as best as possible so we can get a good picture. So we have. And then the Downtown Leadership Council is looking at infrastructure issues and has requested a consultant to look at what our infrastructure needs are. And as a city council member, I would like to know what percentage of any new projects serve new development versus improve our existing infrastructure. And so we're working towards that, but it's a struggle. There's interests that would like everyone else to pay for the new infrastructure and not know how much new infrastructure everyone else is paying for. So it's we're working at it. I think we've made some progress, and we'll make more progress.
Yeah, I think, Tracy, we talked kind of throughout the show a little bit about infrastructure, but yeah, maybe expand a little bit on your thoughts on that.
Sure. I think that for many of the older neighborhoods in town, particularly those surrounding downtown, the idea of more density downtown is troubling because of the, even if improved, the amount it's going to push through the entire system. And there are many of the older neighborhoods, particularly to the immediate west of downtown, who have tremendous problems with their sewer and can end up on the plan to restructure 10 and 15 and 20 years, decades into the future. So it's hard for folks to understand why there's the resources and time and interest to address the infrastructure capacity issues downtown when a developer comes into town, and yet year after year after year, they run their sump pump and pump brown water out of their basements every time it rains. And I think that's a reasonable policy question to ask.
And so I guess what can, city administration, the council do to kind of address these concerns?
Right.
I mean, like you said, there's been some, maybe the bookkeeping hasn't been too
Well, a couple of things. First, I want to say that this isn't unique to Columbia. Mm-hmm. It's prevalent throughout the United States that cities have grown in development with the hope that new development will somehow pay for itself. Some cities focusing on it in more detail with more planning and better financing, and others not so much. So it's a crisis that a lot of cities are dealing with, or should be dealing with, to different extents. So I think we're asking the hard questions and wanting the analysis and the figures, and we'll be doing that every time in terms of what percentage of this is new infrastructure. We've had a very half-day budget retreat planning process just on infrastructure and looking at how do we charge for new development and infrastructure and comparing it to other communities. Ben Landere did an extensive study in 2007. I asked him to present at the planning budget retreat, and the city manager has asked staff to update his report and an analysis. And consistently, Columbia comes down, is on the bottom in terms of how much we charge new development for the infrastructure.
Well, isn't part of that, too, back to the C2 conversation? Because, I mean, right now we're just asking out of goodwill, right? I mean, that's really all we have. There's very little, like, hard
ordinance. Well, we're saying we don't have the sewer capacity. We don't have the electricity for downtown. If you want to build, you have to pay your share of it
to get this done.
And we have to look at where that money's coming from and what aren't we doing. You know, are we foregoing maintenance needs of existing residents and existing businesses and balance those?
Yes. But if I'm not mistaken, there's not really teeth in city ordinance to that. It's more just
right.
We have to say,
right,
like, this is the situation. We need this in the real world, but there's not, like you're saying, we can't really go back and say, well, here's the equation for how much you have to pay.
So the infrastructure crisis is really sort of an opportunity to look. It's a little informal moratorium, should be, to look at the issues that the infrastructure issues that haven't been addressed, so we can put things in place and planning in place to go forward. So it's an opportunity, actually.
Right. And I think the other piece about it related back to the C2 zoning issue and why it's important and that it is commercial is that, you know, residential development, regardless of the scale, single family, multifamily, is ultimately not as good of public revenue generator as more intensive uses. I mean, we need mixed use downtown because it keeps people safe and because it makes for a vibrant community. But we also need it because we need to generate those resources as a community. So if you turn big chunks of downtown into residential, that is a limit, a cap on ability to grow.
We still have a few minutes left in the show for you to bring in your comments and our audience. The lines are open. Are you for or against the Opus Group development project? And what are your thoughts on downtown development and its current state? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. So another thing, we'll get a little wonky here. We mentioned Jenny Chadwick. She's one of the new council members. The composition of the council has changed a little bit. Barbara, I wonder how you think that may affect development in general, or decisions on development in general going forward. You know, it was a close vote on Opus Group proposal. Do you think this new composition will maybe change the way how meticulous we are about this, that type of thing?
I think the majority on council is concerned about looking at and addressing the infrastructure issues and making sure that we have the necessary ordinances in place to put into effect the extensive planning processes that we already have had, so that what we have for the community as well as downtown is something that is a win for the community, it's a win for the residents, and it's a win for the businesses. And you have to balance all those interests. But that's part of what the planning process was that we went through. And now we need the implementation process. And I think council, the majority of council, is very interested in putting those things in place.
Tracy,
I mean, we don't have a choice.
Why not?
Those things cannot be deferred. It would be devastating for Columbia.
Tracy, what do you think about the new composition of the council? Do you think it changes much?
I don't know yet. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, I think that the response to the Rockbridge State Park bordering property was an interesting one. I think that this renegotiation of moving through an OPIS new ordinance is a very interesting one, and I don't think that we can consistently see yet what's going to happen. I think most of our council people are really thoughtful and look at each thing that comes before them and
okay.
do what they can.
So we've got just a few minutes left in the show. You know, we've talked about all these different scenarios that could play out here, even some that are changing as this show happens. But what's the ideal outcome for each of you, I guess? I'm sure it's probably maybe a little different, but of OPIS, and then I guess just also some of the issues we've talked about with downtown development in general right now. Barbara, let's start with you.
Oh, for OPIS, I think minimum would be meeting those retail office or equivalent first level, and then making sure they pay for their share of the new infrastructure and looking at that in detail. I think it's a relatively small student complex compared to some of the others that might be coming forward. But looking at the balance in the future of what's being done with downtown so that it's a downtown for the community, it's a downtown for students, and it's paid for and the rest of the residents still get their infrastructure needs met. So putting in place the zoning, modernized zoning and the zoning changes that the planning process has planned for is crucial, and then making sure new development pays its fair share.
And we talked already about, you know, we got about a year maybe until we heard from those consultants, but before the show we talked a little bit about maybe another possibility for evaluation of the situation in town.
The Downtown Leadership Council has called for hiring a consultant to just look at infrastructure needs in the city and what they are. You really have to look at what kind of infrastructure you're going to need for the planning we've recommended, and what do we have now, what repairs do we need now, and then who's going to pay for it.
Right.
I guess they won't decide who will pay for it, but we just need to know what we have and how much it will cost and what's new and what's for existing development. And we don't have that information now.
It's just kind of catch as catch can, right?
I mean, right, yeah. I mean, they weren't really keeping track of even where the infrastructure was years ago. We've been doing a little bit better, but they have not been keeping track of new infrastructure, how much is going towards new development and how much is going towards existing maintenance.
So, Tracy, go ahead.
I'm not sure. I would be really curious to know what you mean by not keeping track of, but that's a different issue.
They know how much they've spent on, let's say, the power or not the power, the sewer plant expansion. Then the question is, how much of that, break it down to the millions, how much is for improving our existing delivery of services to the existing this existing community, and how much is to handle expansion in the future. They are having a very difficult time breaking that down for us.
That's shocking.
Yes, yeah.
That's shocking.
Well,
right, they just haven't kept track of it that way.
Tracy, we have about 30 seconds, so you can either respond to that or give me what you think, your ideal situation for OPIS. Take your choice.
right. Well, I agree with the things that Barb said about reconfiguring so that it's consistent with the plant or with the long-range plans. I also think that one really great thing out of this process has been pulling together a group of people who understand and are committed to making sure that we comply with the plans that we've made together and with the processes going on in the city, and that group is, I think, going to be together.
Okay.
Well, thanks. We're going to have to end it there. We're all out of time. That's it for today's Intersection. Thanks to our guests, Ward 6 City Councilmember Barbara Hoppe and Tracy Grieber-Rice, a former council candidate and community advocate who helped gather signatures on Repeal 6214. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday afternoon. You can watch live streaming video of our program each Monday afternoon online at kbia.org. Alongside that video, you can submit your questions and comments and take part in an online discussion with others in the audience. You'll also find an archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is a broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Intersection is produced by Janet Saidi and Bridget Bowden. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Rachel Gangware, Casey Morell, and Abigail Keel. Pat Akers is our audio producer. Executive directors are Mike Dunn and Mike McKean, and I'm Ryan Famuliner. Thanks for joining us today, and have a great week.